Hi, I'm Carmen LaBerge. Here's the podcast for Connecting Faith. Enjoy the conversation.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Hello, friends. I'm Carmen LaBerge. This is Connecting Faith. We're here to reconnect the eternal with the everyday and get God back into the conversation in ways that honor Jesus. And so if you are interested in making those connections between the headline news and God's perspective on life and our life together as people in a pluralistic culture and in a time of great change, man, those are the conversations that we like to have right here on Connecting Faith. Hey, let me give you advance warning that in what we call the fourth segment, so at 45 after the hour or a quarter till the next hour, however you want to think about that, I'm going to be taking your calls. And so the studio line will be open. It is 877-933-2484. You should actually just put it in your speed dial. Like, just go ahead and do that. Put it under, like, Carmen. Put it under Connecting Faith. You could, you know, save it in lots of variety of ways. You could add it to your favorites on your phone so that when we open the phone lines, you won't have to be trying to figure out, how do I spell 877-93-FAITH on my cell phone when I don't actually get those letters? So there you go. It's 877-933-2484, and phone lines are going to be open in the fourth segment of today's show so that you and I can actually talk about what we're talking about so that we can make the connecting point together between the headline news of the day, God's perspective on things, and then our witness as Christians in this culture. All right, friends, so you can follow me on Twitter at Carmen LaBerge, and you can check out the other stuff that I am talking and writing about at my website, which is reconnectwithcarmen.com. All right, so I think it was 2 days ago maybe that we talked about Andrew Brunson, who is a Presbyterian pastor. He's been serving in the nation of Turkey on behalf of Christ for 23 years. And for the last 16, going on 17 months, he has been in a Turkish prison. And he's been he's actually been languishing in the Turkish prison without a formal indictment. And I was sharing with you the rather disturbing and troubling news that, in fact, an indictment had been issued. We now know what that says. It's 62 pages long. That's an extremely long indictment because basically the prosecution makes its entire case in the indictment. So 62 pages long. Let me summarize it in one overarching charge against Andrew Brunson, again, our Christian brother serving on behalf of Christ in the nation of Turkey for the last 23 years. He's charged with terrorism. Let me tell you how the term terrorism is defined in the 62-page indictment. It's defined this way: Christianization. Just pause there for just a second because you did not hear me incorrectly. The terrorism charge against this Christian who has been laboring in the nation of Turkey in a humanitarian way and, yes, in a gospel way for 23 years, Andrew Brunson, pastor of a church in İzmir, Turkey, is now charged with terrorism defined as Christianization. I want you to pause there for a moment and remember that Turkey is a NATO ally. And yet, Turkey is seeking to condemn an American citizen to the equivalent of a life sentence. Andrew and I actually graduated from seminary in the same year. He is, like me, very close to his 50th birthday. In fact, I think his is past and mine is coming up. So we're talking about a man who is just 50 years old, and the charges against him would be for a sentence of 35 years. So I think no doubt the way we should think about this is they are charging him with something that would result in a life sentence. For the offense of what? Well, for the offense of not just being a Christian, but actually seeking to carry out the mission of Christ to his disciples, that as disciples, we would make other disciples. That's what Christianization is. And Christianization is now a terroristic offense in the nation of Turkey. A NATO ally. I really am trying to astonish you with this news, because if we let this simply pass by our personal and collective radar as if nothing substantive is happening here, nothing to see, nothing to see, move along, if we just allow this to be part of the noise in the every 15-second news cycle that we find ourselves in today, I think we will be missing something incredibly significant in terms of a transition, not just in Turkey itself, but a transition of the relationship of the nation of Turkey to the rest of the world. The Islamization, the migration of the nation of Turkey away from that bridge country between the East and the West, under Erdogan, you should see it now as a country that is not only contrary to the gospel, but contrary to gospel people. And so I just think that that's an incredibly important thing for us to recognize. And so when I heard this news and began to process this, that Andrew was being charged with Christianization, I remembered back to a series of teachings that I did a number of years ago, and the question that we were posing together in this Sunday night Bible study that I was in was, if you were literally put on the stand, if you were accused of being a Christian, would there be enough evidence to actually convict you? And so when I think about the situation that Andrew is in and that he is being put on the stand, and the charge against him is not just that he is a Christian, but that he's actually seeking to advance the gospel in this generation by making disciples of other people, Christianization, as they've defined it here. If we were put on trial for such a thing tomorrow, would there be enough evidence to convict us? And that question itself is, frankly, pretty convicting. Christianity is certainly on trial every day in the culture. Christianity is certainly on trial every day around the world. And yes, in the 21st century, Christians still have to go on trial in many places around the world for seeking to share Christ and simply live as Christians in cultural contexts where that is not welcome. That leads me to one other headline news story of the day, and it involves Boko Haram and the nation of Nigeria. And I'm sure that you remember now, a couple of years ago, when Boko Haram kidnapped a couple hundred girls from a Christian school in Chibok. Do you remember that? Most of those girls have not been, 276 girls were kidnapped. It's nearly 4 years later, and only about 100 of them, 100 of them are still missing. 100 of them have never returned home. Well, last week, another 100 girls were abducted, not from a Christian school, but from a boarding school. The overwhelming number of these girls are Muslim, and all of the Muslim girls have been safely returned home. And yet the Muslim girls are testifying that their Christian classmates remain as captives. And so if you are wondering how you can be praying today for your Christian brothers and sisters around the world, here are two examples of a desperate need for us to be people who are not only ardently praying, but becoming educated about the persecution and discrimination that our Christian brothers and sisters are experiencing around the world. If you need some resourcing on that, I don't think I have any better ministry partner out there than Voice of the Martyrs. You can find them at persecution.com. And so I just want us to be not only praying for, but I want us to be people who activate our own political advocacy. So however it is that you could be advocating on behalf of Andrew Brunson, however it is that you could be advocating on behalf of Christians living in countries where Christianity is not only not the majority, but is a discriminated against, in fact, persecuted minority, let us be very mindful that we're going to spend eternity with our Christian brothers and sisters. And so when I meet them in heaven, I certainly want to be able to say, I not only prayed for you, I literally did everything that I could think of in my generation to come alongside you in your plight. I did not just peaceably let the news about your hardships pass me by. I stopped and I prayed and I lifted you up before the Lord. I asked for him to intercede on your behalf. And yes, I called my congressman. I did what I could do. I I rallied support on social media. I let people know. I became a person who used my social influence, whatever that is, to actually raise concern about your cause to others. So do that today. Do that today. Use whatever influence you have on behalf of our Christian brothers and sisters around the world who do not enjoy the freedoms that we enjoy here in the United States of America. All right, friends, I got to take a quick break. When we come back, I am going to be joined in conversation by a person who actually does what we're doing right now every day. His name is Nick Pitts. He does a thing called the Daily Briefing, and I want to share it with you, and I want to share him with you if you're not already familiar with him. And he and I are going to be talking about the headline news of the day, everything from the Austin bomber to Facebook. So don't go anywhere. You're listening to Connecting Faith. I'm Carmen LaBurge, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Carmen LaBurge. You're listening to Connecting Faith. We are seeking to bring the gospel to bear on the headline news of the day and everything else that's going on in the world, because there's literally not one inch of what's going on about which God does not care. And so we, as his people deployed in the culture as the ambassadors of the kingdom of heaven in the midst of the kingdoms of this world, we want to be people who are fully equipped to engage in the conversations of the day in ways that are not only well-informed, but actually winsome in terms of communicating biblical principles and the reality of who God is and that God cares about everything. So I'm thrilled to introduce you to Nick Pitts. If you're not already familiar with him, he's a guy you need to know. I would say that in terms of the emerging generation of Christian thinkers and culture makers out there, Nick's right at the top of my list. So he's the executive director of the Institute on Global Engagement at Dallas Baptist University. He's also a weekly co-host on the Point of View radio show. He writes a daily email that I heavily depend on called the Daily Briefing. It highlights the day's news and adds a biblical perspective. And he's also young enough. In fact, he's so young that some of the cultural references he makes, I then have to Google. But he's young enough that he is able to actually speak into a generation that some of us have already, frankly, conversationally lost touch with. And so, Nick Pitts, welcome to Connecting Faith.
Carmen, it's so good to be with you all. So good to be well thought. Thank you so much for those kind words.
Well, you are a person who is able to pull together just a wide variety of ideas and thoughts and distill them down in such a way that is really a blessing to people. So I do want to tell people how they can get your daily briefing. Do they just go to dailybriefing.net and sign up?
Yeah, so you can go to thebriefingactually.net. So it's thebriefing.net, and kind of what you alluded to is just the sense that we're being inundated with news today. We don't know what to trust, and we don't know where to go in order to try to make sense of the news. And so what I try to do every morning is I try to get up as early as I can and try to read through the news and then just look at the very heart of it. What is actual, the things that will be talked about and that are implications within our life? And then also, what's something, what's news, what's new research that makes sense of life, that helps us explain some of the emotions that we're feeling, some of the spirits of the air, one might be able to say, and then do so from a biblical perspective, like you do so well over radio. A sense that if the biblical narrative is true, it's a light to our path and a guide for our feet, that it's important for us to be able to do so in a considerate manner, handle the Word of God in such a way to help us figure out how to navigate through this thing called life.
Mm. All right, so let's give people an example of what you do in the briefing and what, hopefully we're doing every day here on Connecting Faith, which is equipping folks for the real conversation to the day. So let's talk about the Austin bomber. This young man recorded a 25-minute confession to his crimes, and so we don't all have access to that 25-minute confession. But what the police are telling us about it is pretty illustrative in terms of what was going on in this young man's life. Give us a little perspective on the Austin bomber, things that we now think we know about him, and our this whole desire that we have to actually know what people's motivations or motives are.
Yeah, it's tragic, one, and it's just fascinating, too. We found out that he graduated from home school in 2013. He had 30 college credit hours, which is just very significant. So it shows some bit of ambition and initiative with him, and also a trajectory towards at least going to college if you're going to have that many credit hours in high school. But there was a period in which he decided after he graduated in 2013 that he wouldn't go on straight to college. And then even on his mother's Facebook page, she was celebrating the fact that he was graduating from high school and even considering going on a mission trip that summer or in the in-between time before he started college. And that's where we really just see this drop-off, and an extent that he was a Christian. There's reports that say that he went to Austin Stone Church, which is just a phenomenal church down there. But we really don't know anything from what happened between 2013 and 2018, which I think is a precursor and maybe just a glimmer of, I think, an experience that many Americans can probably resonate with, in the sense that there's the potential that there was a loneliness there, that we're on the verge of seeing a loneliness epidemic begin to take place here in the U.S. And what's happening is, what we see is, there was just an absence of activity from what we know from this young man for over those 5 years. And from a biblical perspective, what we know to be true is that though there's a propensity and there's a desire at times to want to do good, that it's true that the dividing line between good and evil cuts through every human heart. And left to our own devices, we just have a propensity to perpetuate evil instead of being agents for good. And tragically and unfortunately, this man acted on that evil and enacted terror in Austin for almost a month, and really did some significant damage, not only to others, but also just even considering his family as well. They're just heartbroken over this.
Right. So let's talk about that, because mm-hmm. I think that as information about him comes out, I'm like imagining, all right, what if this were your kid? Or what if this were your grandchild?
Yeah.
What if this were, this was a kid you went to youth group with? I'm really struck by how engaged he was. His friends describe him as, an active Christian to whom, faith was really important. He didn't just go to worship. He was actually, he's going to Bible study. And I realize this now, reaches back 5 years in terms of active participation. But 5 years is really not that long when you're talking about a person who's only 23. And so I do think the loneliness issue and the disconnect that we allow to happen, particularly when kids make that transition from high school to college or high school age to college age, and we've sort of as a culture begun to just allow them to check out of church. But this kid exemplifies that failing to be vigilant when our young people are young adults can have really terrible consequences.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think one of the interesting things that you illuminate is there was just a checkout. There was an active participation in his faith when you saw it in high school, but something checked out. But what we know to be true, what's different than any other generation, is he might have been able to check out from his immediate surroundings, but he was able to check in at least through online and through the internet. And for as much good as the internet can do, we also know that there's the channels and the avenues by which evil can be very influential in an individual's life, especially through the internet. And this is everything from generating from the human experience to, we know this is what ISIS has done. They have one of the most advanced strategies when it comes to training these individuals. And not to say that he's associated with ISIS in any way. I'm just saying that this type of information, such as building a bomb and detonating a bomb, is readily available on the internet. And really, when you're spying, when you don't have individuals that are speaking into your life, that are speaking life into you, and trying to, what the biblical narrative would say, to sharpen you as iron, to help encourage you and move you in a path that would lead to the fullness of life and the completion of your joy, when you don't have those individuals that are in your life, it really does. It inevitably not only harms your soul, but it has the ability to harm others, is what we just see emblematic within this incident.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you to describe to us how you do what you do, because I think that what you have just said, and you're encouraging us to then – okay, take the news of the day, bring the biblical worldview to bear, and then speak it back out, like actually use it in our conversations with others, particularly those about whom we're concerned. So tell us how, because I think this is what people want to know about both of us. How do you do what you do? How do you do what you do every single morning when you're distilling down the news and you are allowing God to speak through his word, which he has already spoken, into these realities?
Yeah. So, and I know it's going to seem very trite, but like at the morning, I always begin with a prayer. God, give me eyes to see and help me to be a voice that is kind of similar to the Proverbs 25 man, that blessed is the man that brings water from a faraway country. Like, I want to refresh individuals, and I'm believing it to be true that my God has given me everything pertaining to life and godliness and everything that I could need. And so that in turn allows me with open hands to be able to try to help people, be people of Issachar, what in 1 Chronicles 12:32. And so what that looks like for me is I'm reading wide. So I'm not just reading on the left and right side of the political divide. I'm also reading not only U.S. sources, but also European sources and Asian sources. Everything from Der Spiegel in Germany to USA Today to New York Times. I'm trying to read as wide as I can. And then I'm asking two questions as I'm compiling this email. What is it that individuals will be talking about, one? And then two, what is it that would explain how they're interacting in this world today? So, for example, what people will be talking about, the Austin bomber. So naturally, I want to try to find an article that's as free as I can be from bias and then highlight that article. And then as I'm thinking through this article, I'm looking for the echoes of the divine in the article. And it's very light. You can hear the echo binging across your screen of the loneliness, and what we're seeing is just this silence that happened from 2013 to 2018. Well, the biblical narrative has something to say relative to silence. We hear it all the way in Genesis 2, where it's not good to be alone, all the way to 1 Corinthians 15:33, where bad company corrupts good morals. And so trying to hear those echoes and knowing it to be true that the biblical narrative is alive and well. We're in new situations, but the old ancient texts are still just as active today. And then thinking through kind of some of these social science surveys, there was a study that was put out just yesterday that I highlighted, I believe, in yesterday's edition, about the idea that when you travel abroad, you have a greater sense of self. Well, what we've always known to be true is that this is the same God that here in the U.S. as he is here over in China. But the cultural differences help us to be able to accentuate and understand the values so that we can resonate with someone like David when he looks to the wonders of the sky and recognizes how small he is, but how great his God is. Amen. And how creative he is.
All right, we got to take a quick break. But friends, when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation with Nick Pitts. This is Connecting Faith. I'm Carmen LaBurge. We'll be right back. This is Carmen LaBurge. You're listening to Connecting Faith. Welcome back. I'm in the middle of a conversation with Nick Pitts. You can follow Nick on Twitter at JNickPitts. You can follow me on Twitter at Carmen LaBurge. And you can sign up for Nick's daily briefing at thebriefing.net. Now, on The Briefing every single day, which folks can get in their inbox just like I do, you literally take the headline news of the day, but then you also take some studies that are happening out there in places that, well, most of us might not be accessing and reading. And so you highlight some loneliness studies over the last couple of days that I thought were really fascinating. But the headline news today, one of the stories that you highlight that everybody's talking about is the Facebook story. So I thought, Nick, that in jumping back into the conversation, we would lift up the Facebook story and talk about, you know, maybe the the risk that we put ourselves at by being people who want to be, we want to be so well known. We want to participate in the selfie culture. We want to build our brand. But there's a lot of danger in doing that. And folks are using that information in ways that we might not be paying attention to. And now we're finding out that, you know, that the way social media can be used is not all positive. So bring us up to speed on the Facebook story and then how you address it from a biblical worldview.
Yeah, I am one of those individuals. So I'm a millennial, so that means I'm a Snapchatting, selfie-taking, Uber-riding millennial. And so I'm very much aware of the cautionary tales of Facebook. What's fascinating, it kind of originates out of this quote-unquote scandal from Cambridge Analytica, where they access certain information. And then Mark Zuckerberg, who's the chair over at Facebook, says that in an interview with CNN, said that they had a responsibility to protect your data, and if they can't do that, then we don't deserve to serve you. But it really does. It brings up an interesting point because Facebook is free, and so we're freely kind of giving our information over to them. And in turn, though, the Facebook business model is very clear. I mean, they're trying to gather your information in such a way that they might be able to sell it for highly targeted ads to advertisers. And traditionally and above the ethical norm is when they kind of – you consent with that, those terms and agreements that we don't always read, but we just click agree to. And so to a certain extent, we're knowingly doing that. But it does illuminate this desire for us to be known. And especially if you look at the world today, especially here in the West, there's a great desire for transparency. And the studies are very clear that we are not only wanting to be transparent, but we're willing to forsake privacy for the sake of convenience. And that's you can see that in airports when you're having to sign up for information in order that you can get free Wi-Fi, to even our shopping habits on Amazon, that we're checking off some of those agreements, that we're willing to say goodbye to our privacy in order that Amazon might move to the top some of those entities or those products that we have. But in the briefing, it was fascinating because I highlighted there's a book out called In the Swarm by Behan, and it observed that where information is readily and rapidly obtained, like on Facebook, trust will falter and freedom is diminished. And it's fascinating what's happening because we see this time and again in the scriptures, specifically in 2 Kings 20. Hezekiah welcomed in the envoy from Babylon into the treasures and gave them access to everything within the palace and temple. And lo and behold, it would only be two generations later that there would be the demise and the default because this envoy gained access to everything. And in turn, there was no privacy whatsoever nor any freedom anymore.
Okay, so it's like a feast talking to you. And so I want to be sure that we gobble up everything that we can. On the convenience conversation, I read something in the New York Times just a couple of days ago, maybe a week ago now, on this conversation about the cult of convenience, that we give up so much in order to have what we think we need with immediacy. And so we'll even pay more for something just if it's convenient to get it. And what are we sacrificing for convenience these days, or for the myth of convenience, I think, is the other part of that. It's not necessarily more convenient for me to communicate on social media if what I'm really sacrificing for that is an overwhelming amount of time that's being eaten up, time being the one resource that none of us could ever find a way to replace. So can you speak a little bit to that desire that's just within all of us in this generation? For everything to be immediate and convenient, I think that the president of Twitter just recently said that convenience determines everything.
Wow, that's a great line. Yeah, and I think it's very prevalent on social media. So I think this Facebook thing is going to probably be around for a little bit. There's 2.13 billion active users on Facebook. So I think it's caught on to a large degree. But what Facebook does, as well as social media by and large, at the very heart of what it does is it captures you in the moment. There are moments of reflection, like when you first sign on to Facebook during the day, that asks you to look back on 7 years, where you were 7 years ago, 10 years ago, et cetera, et cetera. But it very much does keen and kind of hone in your spirit on trying to be very present in the moment. The kind of the ironic twist is you might be present in the moment on Facebook, but you really disconnect from the larger world as a whole. Gene Twinge at San Diego State University had a fascinating study that was put out and highlighted in the Atlantic that relative to Generation Z, she said that the research is very clear that the longer that you look at the screen, the less likely you are to be happy. And on Facebook, what we do is we get myopically consumed in that moment, but we're very much unaware of what's happening around us. Now, Sherry Turkle has done a lot of work on this relative to reclaiming conversation in her book. She says there used to be a day that we would use our technology to be able to connect with other people, and now our technology is the very thing that's causing us to disconnect. And so it's one, not only taking time away from us, but also, two, if not properly limited and measured, it really is hindering relationships from flourishing around us. And it's those relationships that allow us to be able to gain wisdom and to better understand how we might be able to proceed relative to the choices that are put before us each and every day.
All right, friends, I'm having a conversation with Nick Pitts. You can check out what he's writing at thebriefing.net. Nick, I don't know if it was yesterday or the day before, but the piece that you wrote on America's loneliest workers, like we're literally killing ourselves by disconnecting in the way that you've just referred to. This sentence, and that was really shocking, that according to this research that you quote, loneliness has the same effect as 15 cigarettes a day in terms of healthcare outcomes. Like, and these like lonely people are lonely. Can you address the sort of loneliness epidemic, not only here, because this research, I think, is from the UK, but we've been reading out of Japan that like older women are like going and intentionally doing things that are illegal so that they will get sent to jail so that they won't be alone.
Oh, yeah, it's fascinating. So we are not James Taylor would be very sorry because he doesn't want to be lonely tonight, but nevertheless, you've got Backstreet Boys that are very insistent upon showing us the meaning of being lonely. But nevertheless, I mean, the research is very clear. Over 40% of Americans report feeling lonely. Studies indicate that over 25 years, we've decreased from, on average, 3.7 friends to 1.7, 1.8, depending upon how you round. That there was a 2014 study that found in 1 in 4 Americans said that they had no one they could talk to about personal troubles. And it's very clear, and again, from a biblical perspective, what we know to be true is it's not good for man to be alone. We're not to forsake the gathering together of with other people from Hebrews 10:25. There's this insistence upon community because we were made in the image of God, and God is a community of Father, Son, and Spirit. But it's very disheartening because what's happening in Asia is usually going to be 10 to 15 years, what could potentially trickle out over here. Because like you mentioned, in Japan, with the women that are willingly going to prison, in China, there's literally called a suicide forest where individuals are going off to kill themselves because they're really just very isolated in their surroundings because they've just bought into the idea that their work is their identity. Therefore, they can't have friends, they can't have a companion. And it's very troubling, but this is a beautiful opportunity for the church, though, right? The church has been called to love the neighbor, to love others as you love yourselves. And what a beautiful opportunity for the church to do what it was one of the original tenets of what it was supposed to do, which is be good neighbors, be loving people, because ultimately we have a great neighbor in Jesus that was willing to love us even though we ourselves weren't very lovable.
Okay, so the other piece that you wrote about that I've been tracking the rise in suicide rates, and we've talked at length about the impact and effect of like the Netflix series 13 Reasons Why on suicide ideation among children and young people, and so recently you just posted on this. USA Today quoting these new statistics from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention that teen suicide is soaring. So the sentence that really caught my attention is this one. The suicide rate for white children and teens between 10 and 17 is up 70% between 2006 and 2016. A study of pediatric hospitals found admissions of patients ages 5 to 17 for suicidal thoughts and actions more than doubled from 2008 to 2015. The group at highest risk for suicide are white males between 14 and 21. Let's just talk about the depressive state of things and then how we as Christians can speak hope into that reality.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, one, the statistics are sobering, but two, it's being played out before us. I mean, everything from Chester, I believe it was Bennington from Linkin Park that committed suicide, who is somebody that millennials very much looked up to as just a rock and roll hero of theirs, to even the kind of the Broadway hit sensation Dear Evan Hansen, right? That kind of chronicled the life of an individual that suffered, that did end up committing suicide, and how his friends really rallied around him. I think one of the interesting things with what you see with suicide is it's not necessarily a sadness, but it's more of a numbness that causes these individuals to make that decision. That it's not necessarily because they're sad at life, it's just that they're numb to life. And I hate to sound like a broken record, but a lot of that numbness comes from not having the experience of the joy to be found in the kindling of fires that's known as friendship, of being participating in these institutions that have long held to be true, not only within the American experiment, but the biblical narrative. It's what Robert Putnam, the Harvard sociologist, says: we're bowling alone now. Nobody's joining bowling leagues. Nobody's going to Civitan, Girl Scouts, Boy Scouts, going to the church. These institutes that really did promote communities, or we're just largely isolating ourselves. But one of the beautiful things is the biblical narrative speaks to this, that God walks with us through the valleys of the shadow of death in Psalm 23. He weeps as we weep in John 11:35, and we have a great high priest who can sympathize with our every weakness from Hebrews 4:15. And the beautiful truth about our God is that even though we might feel lonely, we are never alone, because as it says in Psalm 121, that he's the shadow on our right hand. He is very close to us. He can sympathize with us. And he's willing to not only walk with us through this, but recognize the truth that that the cross of Christ testifies that he doesn't just care about our salvation, but he also cares about our situations as well.
Nick Pitts, I'm so glad that that we're walking with you right now in these days. And I'm so glad that you are helping us to make the important connections between what we're reading and experiencing and learning about one another. And you are genuinely helping us see where God is present in those realities and explaining the times in which we're living so that we can then positively impact them for kingdom goodness. And so just thank you for everything that you're doing every single day. Again, folks, you can get the briefing from Nick at thebriefing.net. You can follow him on Twitter at JNickPitts. Nick, thank you so much for joining us today on Connecting Faith.
So great to be with you, Carmen.
All right, friends, we'll be right back. And you can join the conversation, so call me at 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. This is Connecting Faith. We'll be right back. Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBerge. Welcome back. Indeed, God never lets go. Through the calm and through the storm, maybe you are experiencing a period of calm or a period of storm right now. Love to engage with you in conversation, talking about what we've been talking about, thinking together about what we're thinking about. Maybe you want to weigh in on the conversation we had at the outset of the show about Andrew Brunson, our Christian brother, pastor, American pastor, who is in prison in Turkey, and now formal charges filed in a 62-page indictment against him, his crime being Christianization, that he is seeking to actually help other people be Christians. Maybe you've got some thoughts on that. Give me a call at 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. Maybe you want to talk about one of the subjects that Nick and I just talked about. Maybe you want to talk about loneliness. Maybe you want to talk about how it is that that people kind of not only fall away from the church, but we allow them to actually then become isolated and thereby lonely and therefore depressed. And then they end up doing things that idle hands tend to involve themselves in, which you and I both know that's just never has a positive outcome. Maybe you want to talk about any of the headline news of the day. Maybe we'll talk about Facebook. Maybe we'll talk about whether or not you're going to get off of Facebook. with everything that's going on. Maybe you are a person who already does some kind of social media fast or a way of engaging on social media that somehow keeps you insulated from the dangers and the challenges that that we face all the time when we make our private information very public, because that's sort of how things roll today. And, you know, everybody has a sense they need to know everything about everybody else, and therefore I need to, you know, put everything out there in order that I can be fully transparent and everybody can know everything about me. And then I find out, oh, there's some people finding some things out about me that I don't really want other people to know. And using that information, not necessarily against me, but certainly using that information in a way that I did not intend when I shared it. My sister had an experience recently in relationship to like realizing that you were standing having a conversation and that it was being filmed and recorded by a video camera that was, you know, obviously there for security purposes. But under the video, it says it actually like indicated that, you know, it was not just video only, that audio was being recorded as well. And apparently that's sufficient disclosure. If there's a sign that says that we're recording not only video but audio, which in most cases it's video only. So anyway, it's just curious, because then you're immediately thinking, wow, in that conversation that I just had, did I say anything that I would ever want to not hear repeated in public? And I think that that's the challenge of where we now live, just in terms of this point of social location, 21st century Americans who are whose lives are really dominated basically by four technology companies: Apple, Google, Facebook. Who am I missing? Amazon. There you go. They're the four. They're the four big ones who really dominate information and access to goods. So I just want to lift that up to you. Hey, I got Frank from St. Paul on line one. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Carmen, thank you, Carmen. Your program is just a spiritual and intellectual stimulant of great value to me. I'm commenting on the situation regarding the young man, the bomber.
Yes, sir.
And I have to tell you that one of Satan's favorite ploys has always been to isolate people. To isolate people from the church, to the saying "United we stand, divided we fall." There's truth to that, and in many ways, the church has failed a lot of people. I work with Love Lines as a ministry, and we get calls from all over the nation, from isolated people, who many of whom have sought relationships with churches, but been rejected, or can't find one that's born again, spirit-filled, walking with God. Many of these churches are the us for no more kind, and we fail. The church in many ways has when they fail to stay close to God and fail to be reaching out to the to the people the way they should be reaching out, this is the kind of stuff that happens.
Yeah, Frank, I think you
warfare.
Yeah, well, and that's actually the word that was on my lips before you said it. I do think that, and another caller on another day acknowledged this, that like part of the real challenge that we face today as Christians in America is our lack of prayer. Like we tend to be a people who lack enough time in the closet with God. And so maybe what we could encourage people to do today, so listeners, everybody out there, Frank and I are encouraging you today to engage actively in the first act of spiritual warfare, which is prayer. Like none of us can actually bring all of the resources to bear on the situation of loneliness or relational brokenness that is rampant in American culture. But what we can bring to bear are all of the resources of heaven. And so we need to be people who are accessing the kingdom resources that God is even now ready to make available to us to accomplish his good and perfect will in this generation. And so Frank and I are encouraging you, listen to us. We want you to be a praying people. We want you to be actually, I've got a friend who describes it this way. You've got a whole quiver of arrows that you're carrying around. And as you are living in the world, you need to pull those arrows out and you need to literally shoot a prayer in the direction of an individual who is disconnected or broken or hurting and lost. And then I believe we need to bridge that human gap, and we need to put some flesh on the gospel and actually enter into conversations with other people. And Frank, I mean, as you know from Love Lines, it's as simple as casting the line of love to another person and just saying to them, hey, you look like you're hurting. You know, you want to share a cup of coffee. I mean, we're not talking about something that's terribly complex. We're talking about making a human connection that allows someone the time and the space to actually be human, for one of us as a human being to recognize the dignity of another human being and simply let them be authentically human for a moment. Frank, did I about get it? Well, yeah. I might have. Yeah. So thank you. Thank you for raising the spiritual warfare component of this concern and the real need for engagement. The real need for engagement. So folks, so Frank, you got any follow up you want to add to that?
Yeah. 2 Chronicles 7:14. If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and turn from their wicked ways and seek my face and pray, and I will hear from heaven and forgive them their sins and heal their land. It's something that has impact on this issue and everything else that our world faces.
Amen. Thank you, Frank. Thanks for listening to Connecting Faith, and thank you for connecting with me by actually giving me a call.
You're welcome. Bless you.
Thank you. You too. All right, friends, if you want to engage in this conversation today or even tomorrow, you can call me at 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. On this subject of engagement, I think that as we conclude our conversation here today, maybe that's the word I'll leave you with. Maybe that's the word I'll encourage you to sort of ruminate on for the next 24 hours. What kinds of things are you engaged in today? At what level of commitment are you engaged in whatever it is that you're doing while you're also listening to this program, right? So a lot of us multitask all the time. And so our level of engagement in various things is sometimes half-hearted, hopefully not half-witted. And so, if I were to invite you to engage in a conversation, under what terms would you be willing to engage? You got to think about that. Frank was willing to engage, and I really appreciate that. We tend to think about engagement in terms of marriage, but you and I are engaged in all kinds of things. And so want to invite us to be engaged thoroughly in God's word and thoroughly engaged in prayer as we seek to engage the issues of the culture in which we live. All right, friends, you are listening to Connecting Faith on Faith Radio, and I want to invite you to download the Faith Radio app and share today's show with someone new. Obviously, you are people who enjoy what's happening here on Faith Radio, and it's because of your gifts that this listener-supported ministry can actually provide relevant Bible teaching and family-focused teaching and compelling conversations. So if you're in a position to do so, go to myfaithradio.com. and become a supporter of My Faith Radio and the programs that you hear here. All right, friends, this is Connecting Faith. I'm Carmen LaBerge. I'll be right back with you tomorrow. Have a great day. God bless.
Thanks for listening to this conversation from Connecting Faith. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend to grow the impact of Connecting Faith. Also, take a moment to subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player and never miss a conversation.